This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Get the app, get the Sports Hub, get Toucher and Rich. Download the Sports Hub app today.
They could light up at the push of a button like they do with our current systems. We could also try doing more raised crosswalks at intersections. If the main goal is to slow drivers down, even if there isn't a pedestrian. Trees also help slow down drivers, so if the city would, you know, start watering them, maybe they would stop dying. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Will Wallachick?
Hi, Will Wallachick from 54 Leverett. I thought we got what we needed from our team today. The players, the coaches, they did a great job this week. We got a lot of our from our leadership, from our players, and they responded today. We got contributions from pretty much everyone, every unit.
I'm sorry, which item are you speaking on? Just to,
I'm not ready to talk about next week's game. What?
What are you speaking of?
Oh, I'm speaking of unfinished business article number one.
But on fair housing?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Just wondering where you were going.
All right.
Thought we were talking about the Patriots for a minute.
Oh, that's so weird. I wasn't talking about. We got contributions from pretty much everyone, every unit, every phase of the team. It's what we needed, and we got it. We give them all the credit. We made enough plays to win it all over the area. Now we're looking at a short week here. We'll have to go back and try to do it again, but it's good to see our players and team respond the way that they did today. I thought we played hard, played well. Hopefully we can do it again. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, you can leave your comments if you want, but thanks. All right. I was in the twilight zone for a minute. Go ahead, Heather.
Oh, it was like a musical introduction.
98.5, the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. That is the sound of a man crapping himself.
Nick's face, because I'm not ready to talk about next week's game. Is
when they ask him a question, he just completely snaps.
It's like when you saw his eyes, if it was a cartoon, you would have heard the word Aruga. Like, it just like popped out of his head. I mean, listen, it's awesome you got in there, but man, you were freaking out.
Yeah, he was really freaking out. But then again, he was in front of some stupid city council, so.
Well, and also at that point, the people in the city council are probably used to people like Nick coming in there because, as we've been discussing over the past several months, the only people that show up there are people trying to get liquor license and maniacs. People who show up and just need somebody to talk to. It's like they don't have money for a therapist, so they just stand up and they bitch in front of a crowd of people.
They're people who want the government to take care of everything.
That's right. So we now go to Seattle, where there is a gentleman who seems to have somewhat of an issue that was brought up again because an incident happened to him a year earlier that kind of gave him a little bit of bias as to how he wants to address this crew. So let's go to the Northwest, shall we? The great city of Seattle, and find out what this gentleman has to say to the city council in order to get something passed. Let's take it away, Fred.
133 is James Inman. Thanks.
I was in the protests. I didn't get arrested, but a year before the entire protest, I was arrested for saying the F word, and I will not use that word in front of the council. I'm sorry. I will substitute the word forget for the word the F word, okay? So I was trying to go to the bathroom, and the bathroom door was locked, and I said, forget it. And this lady said, excuse me, and I said, I need to go to the bathroom. She says, your language. I go, you've never heard the word forget? How about forget you, you mother forgetter? You ever heard that word before? And then I ran across the street to find another bathroom, and she called the police.
He didn't have to go to the bathroom. He just needed a bathroom to do whatever nefarious business he was up to.
Right, just to yell at the toilet.
Yeah.
And this cop came up to me and said, let me see your license. And I said, what for? You're going to arrest me for saying the word forget? And he said, put your hands behind your back. And I got arrested for saying the word forget. So this is my open letter to Mark Sidran. You dysfunctional, mentally ill derelict, demon scum, antichrist, spewing worthless, constipated balls of dung from your Funkin' Wagnall education. You're a liquid-emitting fart. You evil bastard.
How old is this guy?
I mean, he's probably like mid-30s.
Oh, I thought he was younger.
Liquid-emitting fart.
Like, wow. I think he stole this from Shakespeare.
It isn't, well, Dr. Seuss.
You're a clear-cutting, cigar-smoking, depraved lunatic with a machine replacement head. Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps and please hack off your own feet and eat them. You profit-seeking circus act. Your idiot gibberish fuels the dystopian nightmares cooked up daily from the industrial laboratories of death. The giant echo of no trickling down from overpaid, overfed lackeys. The Gucci overlords and conservatives have always been black-hearted demons, and all WTO representatives are their mutated half-human stepchildren.
I would be freaking out if I was the guy he was talking about.
Right.
This is a guy who's not afraid.
This dude's on a watch list somewhere.
Yeah, this is a good guy who's not afraid to you know, cave into the dark side a little bit.
Yeah.
You're incontinent pond scum. You spineless vegetable head of dead lettuce with the mental capacity of a Swatch battery, the cognitive skills of a pigeon, and...
Swatch?
Obviously, yeah. It's not very high tech.
Somewhere the fat boys are nodding their heads and saying, yes, another one sold.
The cognitive skills of a pigeon and the intelligent quotient of a dirt clod. A blood clot for a brain and a softened skull you can poke your finger in like a stick of hot butter. Those little rodent eyes like two shiny black BBs that never blink, gazing away into empty space. And a third eye on the side of the skull, dripping ice knot, combing your hair over so as not to scare children. A dead third eye just above the right ear like a milky black protruding mole. You black magician and puppet master, trained by Aleister Crowley and raised by feral goats, turning Seattle into a Nazi Klan outpost with David Duke's twin alcoholic brother at the controls. Your entire philosophy is a bunk corporate hand and all your heroes are evil. Ayn Rand is a walking brain hemorrhage. Rush Limbaugh is a whimpering dehumanized thug. Ronald Reagan is a diseased midget steeped in chocolate slim fast. To sum up, my worthless friends, Mark Sidran is a plastic toad, a demonic fascist, a pathetic worm with dogmatic sermons for an industrial cesspool, a space heater filled with human waste and cat hair, a fan of John Tesh, a corporate shill, a floating green turd in the punch bowl of life, and made bright yellow vitamin fortified flow onto the door handle of his holy automobile.
That is someone I don't want to be on the wrong side of.
My God.
I usually don't believe in curses, but I think this guy could get it done.
By the way, all the
liquid emitting fart?
You're a liquid emitting fart.
All the credit in the world for letting this guy go as long as he did.
Well, I think the people were like behind him. They were having the time of their lives.
Who's the guy? Who's the guy he's pissed at?
A cop.
Or it's a former city attorney, Dan is telling me the other room.
Oh, okay.
All right. He is the guy who enacted the civility laws that this guy was arrested under.
Okay.
That's why he's angry. Okay, I got
it. You're a clear-cutting, cigar-smoking, depraved lunatic with a machine replacement head.
Okay, I don't even know what that means. But
hack off your own feet and eat them.
Sometimes it's not easy to be a public defender or whatever the hell it is.
Put your hands behind your back.
Okay, maybe I will.
Demon scum, antichrist, spewing worthless, constipated balls of dung from your Funkin' Wagnall education.
Okay, all right. I don't know if I want to. As I said, give these guys credit. They didn't cut him off.
Oh, no. You cut him off, and your head might come off.
You're a liquid-emitting fart.
Tucker and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We're Tucker and Rich. On to the ALCS, where they will take on the Houston Astros. The Boston Red Sox, gutsy managing from old skipper Alex Cora last night, using Chris Sale in the eighth. John Wallach, very concerned, thinking that, making the great point of saying if it didn't work, we would be second-guessing Cora, which obviously is the case. And
if it didn't work, I don't know what he would have done. He would game five.
He would have gone by committee. He would have started Sale, and then he would have
Sale would have given you maybe two innings.
Yes.
And the game would have been, obviously, the weather forecast for tomorrow is horrible. So the game would have been Friday. You would have gotten the extra day of rest for him. That would have been good. But Sale's shoulder, the way it is, I mean, they're babying him. I mean, really, legit, they're not taking any chances. He might have given you two innings, and then it's all hands on deck, and I don't know.
Then you bring in Price.
Price would have been in there, and that would have been a roller coaster. And just because you got shutout innings from Barnes and Brazier last night doesn't mean that was going to happen on Friday night in a winner-take-all. I mean, it would have been really scary. I mean, good for Cora going for the kill shot the way he did. But, I mean, because really, if you think about it, there was no one else to do it. Because you brought in Brazier and Barnes early. So, I mean...
Now, this is how you manage in the playoffs. Yeah. Have to take these chances. And then, I mean, that's what you got to do. I mean, that's the way that the game has evolved. Is that you can't expect a starter to give you eight innings. I mean, you got to start manufacturing things and you got to use your bullpen.
It worked out well.
Ways.
Because essentially, you know, Sale pitched on his regular turn. I mean, there's 5 days until... you know, you have 4 days off now until game one. So Sale will pitch game one, and then I don't know who you pitch in game two. I don't know if you can go back to Price in game two. I mean, he pitched well against him out of the bullpen last year in the playoffs, but I almost think you go with Eovaldi in game two.
But do you want to pitch Price on the road?
Well, and that's the thing. Houston has that short porch in left, and he's a left-handed pitcher, so I don't know. And unlike Fenway, there's no 37-foot wall to take away some of those fly balls.
I'm keeping my rotation the way I had it.
Yeah.
And then you got to just, you know, be prepared. Hopefully Sale can go for a decent amount of time and you can save some of your bullpen. Because you have to have protection now every time David Price goes in. I mean, you just do.
The question is now, and we touched on this a little earlier this week, is there any shame? Is this season a disaster if they lose to Houston in the ALCS? And previously, I'd say, yes, it is. You win 108 games, best season, regular season in franchise history. Anything short of the World Series is a huge, huge disappointment. But after watching what Houston did to Cleveland, and I understand they were far and away the worst division winner, but they hit 8 home runs in 3 games against that team. Everyone who won a World Series is back this year. Their pitching is superior rotation-wise by a lot to the Red Sox. I don't know if the Red Sox go out and lose in 6, I don't know if it's necessarily a horrendous thing. You can understand it. I don't think it's the abject disaster that I thought it would be a couple of weeks
ago. Well, the Red Sox were in a better division. They won more games and they have home field, obviously. I think it's terrible. If they don't win that series, the only way that I could see that it's excusable if it's David Price's fault. Is if David Price just blows up again and gives you an inning.
I mean, I look at Houston's team. They had the best team ERA in Major League Baseball.
Oh, no, and they have proven postseason starters. Anytime you can trap Verlander out there, he's an animal in the playoffs. Yeah, it's going to be a very tough series. Obviously, Verlander's not going to be intimidated on the road. He'll come into game one. He's a guy who can go up against Sale. I mean, that's difficult to say who you'd rather have in a game one in the playoffs.
I mean, Houston had the best bullpen ERA in baseball. They had the best starting team ERA in baseball.
Yes.
I mean, they have a tremendous advantage over you.
It's true. I mean, the Red Sox are going to need starters to go a long way.
And they don't have it. They don't have starters that go a long way.
Well, they managed to keep it together against the Yankees.
Sale is a five-inning pitcher, maybe six if he's economical.
Right.
And then the circus begins.
And then you could have Kimbrel come in with his dumb arm thing and almost give everything away.
Kimbrel's going to have to pitch two innings multiple times in this series.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, then you're screwed.
Well, he's the best option they have. Unless you, once again, piece it together. You have Price come out of the bullpen. You have Eduardo Rodriguez come out of the bullpen. Well, I'm saying later in the series, like in between starts. I mean, this is this is the way it's going to have to happen. In order for the Red Sox to beat Houston, you have to have all starters be available on their throw day in between starts to go an inning if you need them. To protect the lead.
You're bringing in Price for an inning, and then you're still going to start
in between games two and six? Hell yes, I am.
See, I'm not doing that.
Absolutely.
I'm not screwing around with that.
No, I'm screwing around with it because he's proven he can do it in the playoffs, and it's proven he can do it in the playoffs against this team.
But you take him out of the pen, and then you're asking him to start a couple of days later,
game
and he's already terrible.
Game four of, say, the playoff series, Price goes out and gets bombed at game two. Game four...
All right, so
if you need him for an inning, you absolutely throw him out.
Yeah, but
there.
If he throws one inning, that's 50 pitches, so he's going to be a little bit out of
sorts. That would be a problem, right.
It's not economical
but,
in
I mean,
this situation.
Eduardo Rodriguez is your long man. Obviously, he'd be the guy to go an inning or two in the middle innings. But as a setup guy, in between starts,
I understand
games
what you're
three and seven, it would be for Eovaldi, I assume. But, you know, or Porcello. You know, in game one or two, Porcello goes out there for an inning like he did in the first series. That is what it's going to take in order to get the job done against this team.
Greg, go ahead.
John, I'm sorry if you touched on this, but I just wanted to know what your thoughts about pulling Porcello was, because I didn't necessarily agree with that last night.
About what?
About pulling Porcello when they did.
I never agree with pulling. You got a starter going well. As Porcello was, I mean, his pitch count wasn't high. I mean, I don't understand why they pulled him, to be honest with you. And I was kind of surprised, looking back on it, why they did it. I mean, Porcello threw 65 pitches. I mean, it wasn't like he was playing with fire. He was pretty good. And I would have gone further. I mean, anything,
I don't know. He,
anything to take. To
he got very him, lucky in that and when Hicks was up.
Sure he did. And looking back I on mean, it, you're right. But at the same time... It wasn't like the game was tied. You had a margin for error, and I understand Barnes has to come in with a clean inning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I wouldn't have put Matt Barnes in there under any circumstances. In a clinching game, forget it. Even though it was the sixth inning and the pressure is significantly less.
I would have pulled Porcello. Hicks was right on him. Josh, go ahead.
Yeah, Wallach, you've just got to shut up because you're going on and on and on. And there's a reason Cora's the manager. You know, the Astros, I feel like, are clearly the better team despite the record. So I just, like, can't listen to you drone on any more about this.
What are you talking about? I just said losing to Houston is not a problem.
But prior to that, you had said even weeks ago it was clear that Houston has a better bullpen, has at least as good of a lineup. And now, all of a sudden, after you see what they did against the Indians, now it's okay if they lose.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Yeah, there you go. Take that. So I would have pulled Porcello. I agree with that decision. And obviously, everything worked out. And your fears of the bullpen, everyone's fears that were legitimate, turned out to be not the case.
If they had any setup man worth a damn, Chris Sale wouldn't have pitched last night.
No.
Corey is well aware of this problem and is going to pitch around it. He's going to do everything he can to keep Matt Barnes away from the eighth inning.
Yes.
And Barnes was his setup guy the entire year when he was healthy. They're going to do everything they can to keep Barnes away from a setup situation in the playoffs.
Yes, that is absolutely the case.
They'll pitch him in the sixth. And by the way, pitching in the sixth is a lot different than the eighth in that guy's mind. He's perfect for that role. Sixth or seventh inning. But he looks like Brazier's the seventh inning guy. I mean, he's the guy, regardless of the circumstance. Whether it's a tie game or a lead, Brazier has the seventh. So that leaves Barnes with earlier work.
Now, I don't know what song the Red Sox will play to get under the skin of the Houston Astros, like they did with their merciless mocking of New York with New York, New York during the celebration. Now, does Houston have some kind of anthem? Is there?
I'm not aware of one.
No. Is there a ZZ Top song that maybe Tube Steak Boogie?
Is the top from El Paso? Where is the top from?
The top just transcends location. They're just Texas boys.
Okay. I mean, they did LaGrange. I mean, that's a whole Texas thing. So I'm wondering.
Maybe you play Tube Steak Boogie.
Yeah.
And you make it happen that way.
And everyone gets really aroused.
Well.
Yeah.
Especially
the ladies.
You need to do that. And by the way, can they stop with Fortnite crap?
No, it's...
Can the Red Sox please...
It's only been all season. I don't know. This didn't just start now.
I know, but it's like stuff that
watching Kinsler do the hip shake was unnerving last night, I will admit.
Yep. I mean, my son's never watched the Red Sox probably in his life, and he dances around with those dumb Fortnite dances. You're dancing around
Does
like
he
a 10-year-old.
Really? Oh, man.
They all do.
Oh, man.
They get on... They all do. And they're unaware the Red Sox do it. Like, when they get on base during baseball, they start doing it. They do it in the dugout. They do it when they're at your house. They do it when they're at someone else's house.
I'm so lucky I've dodged that bullet so far. I really have. The more I hear, it's not just
how
you.
How out of it
I have
are
a
your
bunch
kids?
Of, as I said, it takes a while to get out to the suburbs, apparently.
I mean, if you turn on the system, it says click on Fortnite.
I know.
And then it's free. That's how they get you.
My kids are playing Madden Mobile right now. That's what they are.
You got them all. That stupid Fortnite crap. I mean, it's like 8-year-olds. I mean, that's what 8-year-olds do.
Mm-hmm.
I like the video game.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Fortnite dance.
I'm putting it off as long as I can. Yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Well, they're smart. As soon as you turn on the stupid thing, it's Fortnite is right there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had no idea that my kids had it.
Unless I shut off the internet connection to the system.
Well, no, I have to hide the power cable.
Oh, man.
Or else on Saturday, he's up at like 5:30 in the morning.
It's like, you cannot take the car. I'm taking the spark plugs out. Won't be able to start that thing. Forget it.
All right. Well, listen, we have for you Phil Collins last night. I heard it was just a show where he was energetic and all over the place. And John Wallach was at the show, as was Rich. And Wallach has been kind enough to review the show in song. So we will have that for you in just a moment. Here are the headlines.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Be listening at 7:50 this morning for your chance to score tickets to see the Bees take on the Oilers tomorrow night at the Garden. Select tickets still available. Visit Ticketmaster.com/Bruins to purchase today. The reason that this song is playing is that last night, a man by the name of Phil Collins of Genesis and a solo fame did his Not Dead Yet tour.
Well, I'm still not sure.
At the Garden, and not only was Wallach there, but Rich was there in a luxury box, fulfilling every middle-aged white fantasy.
Dude.
Not only seeing Phil Collins, but doing it from a luxury box.
It was nice going to a show where I was the young buck in the crowd. I was this little the stallion. I mean, so I got in the show, and I'm looking around, and you know, Phil Collins was old when we were kids. Like, I mean, he was Wallach's age.
Yeah.
So, the guy's ancient. So, by the way.
Wallach was like looking in the mirror to 5 years from now.
Dan sent me a picture of him. For how many years ago was that where you were with Phil Collins?
Thankfully, I look kind of young, but I think it was 20 years ago when he did that Tarzan soundtrack.
Yeah. And he looked 90 then.
He looked 90, yeah.
Yeah. So, Phil Collins, so the beginning of the show starts. And I'm looking at the crowd, and there's a look, without a doubt. I mean, the average age is probably what? 60?
I was going to say about 56.
Okay.
My wife and I were the youngest people in our
room. It's got to be older than that, because I remember that stupid a-hole
from my Little League when I was a kid. And he would walk around with that dumb no jacket required shirt on constantly. And I must have been seven or eight. So, no, the average. So I'm 43.
Right.
And if I was 36, the average age was in your 70s.
So at the lights go down. There's no opener. And the crowd starts applauding, but no one's really standing up. Because
yeah, it's a polite clap.
Polite, just hey,
like hey, you're right on. Everyone's just like right on time.
Right, I can make it home right. Okay. You know, early evening sleep. And so, from the side of the stage, a spotlight hits the right side of the stage, and the crowd's like cheering. And all of a sudden, you see a guy with a cane come walking out, and it takes maybe a full minute for him to get to the right side of the stage to the end of the other side, and. My wife is looking at it. She goes, that's Phil Collins is messing around, right? That's not really him using the cane. And I'm like, yeah, that's him. And she goes, she thought it was like a Willy Wonka type situation where he's going to throw the cane and do like a flip and go, woo!
Yeah, not dead yet. Is he's like kidding around and walking with a cane and then he's going to chuck it down.
Literally on death's doorstep. And I think that 90% of the people in the crowd had no idea that Phil Collins is in that bad a shape. So he comes out, and he's having a really hard time walking. And in the middle of the stage, sitting right there in the front, is what looks like when you can't get a good table at Five Guys, and you have to sit at the counter, the little silver table that's sitting there. So there's a little silver table and a swivel chair, and he puts his cane on the table, and on the table there's like a couple sheets of paper, probably the set list, a little drink of water, a little bowl of snacks.
See, I've never been to a show where the artist has brought out snacks.
He sits down.
You know, water, alcohol. I've been at a show where there was a full bar on stage. I've never seen someone just have like, oh, popcorn.
The crowd reaction was like, you know, when they first see Phil come walking out, it was like, woo!
And then 20 minutes later,
they turn quickly to, oh my God, he's going to die.
Yeah, 20 minutes later when he finally sits down. You're saying this is why he starts at 8:15. So the show starts at 8:30.
He sits down. You're expecting the music to start right away, but he starts like kind of mumbling. He's a little off the mic, and he's got, you know, somewhat of an English accent, and everyone's kind of looking like, what's he saying? And then finally, after about like 2 minutes, you hear the opening of Against All Odds come in, and of course everyone goes nuts. And he starts singing, but the whole time he's singing, leaning back in his chair, and his voice sounds perfect. I mean, it sounds great.
But you would think that would be hard sitting down to sing that well.
You would think, but you know, every time he would just like swivel in his chair, like people would freak out, like "Whoa!" It would be like David Lee Roth when he did Splits, or Gene Simmons when he flew to the ceiling. It was just him, just slowly moving sideways. Like, yay, there's movement. It's like, you know, Christopher Reeve with his finger and stuff. Like, right. It was like, oh my gosh, he's like, it was really, really tough to watch at times. And so then the curtain goes up, and there's a big band behind him where it looks like there's more stuff going on there. His son, by the way, is the drummer.
Yeah.
He's 16 years old, and he crushes.
He's phenomenal.
So he was up there, and you know, he comes out with a bang, and then the middle of it, it's like Songs You Don't Know, and then the end of it, it's just a slew of hits. It's like Invisible Touch into Easy Lover into Sue Studio into Take Me Home, and that's how he ends it. And it was kind of funny too, because during Sue Studio, a bunch of confetti shot all over the stage, and some got on him, and he just had a hard time getting it off.
Yeah, ripping it, like, rip it off of
him. Sue Studio is like a really, I mean, it's a catchy song, but it's a really dumb song, so you would feel like you would have to be moving around and like, hey, this is kind of fun, but to sit down, Sue Studio,
yeah,
just say the word, oh.
You know what was really funny, Fred? And Rich, I don't know if you saw this, but you know, after there was a break because Take Me Home was the encore. So he finished the studio, great song, there's confetti everywhere. And now, if you took one look at set list, you know he's got another song left in him. Is he really going to have to leave the stage?
Yeah, we were saying the same thing.
And sure enough, he left the stage.
He took like 2 minutes to slowly walk up the stage of the
cheering,
game.
And it took him 5 minutes to come back. So, and you're like, oh, don't make him do this again.
So our seats were as far to the right of the stage. Like, we were like looking sideways. So I saw him walk on and off the stage. Oh. And the first time before the encore, he like slowly walked like behind like the drum riser. All right. But when he left the show, like, he had to walk downstairs, and I'm like, dude, he is going to fall, and he's going to break all of his bones at some point in this tour. Like, it was like, he, like, really slow and walking down there. But John Wallach had himself a great time. I do know that. And he was inspired. So he put together a little something, a review of the concert, as the only John Wallach can. Take it away, John.
I'm gonna clap my hands politely, snap my fingers.
Just a bunch of white dudes in polo shirts. Everybody's skin is beige. There's a guy that comes on our show. Our list is low, he blows. Sarge, 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 yo.
Aha.
All the callers wanna be the first to say that he's the in 20 years, everybody at the show tonight will be gone. They'll be dead.
Including me.
Including me. Including me. Including me.
Fantastic,
John. I like the self-respect of that. The self-reflective moment at the end, yeah, when you realize that your wait death is imminent when you look around wait and see
the clock's running.
You see on your mortality, yeah, sitting in front of you, dude. I'm not kidding you. It was just a sea of white. Like, if you really wanted to try to find somebody who wasn't white, it was...
You had to look up on stage.
It was tougher to find someone who wasn't white at that show than it was to find a girl at the Rush concert. That's how bad it was.
Well, yeah. Alex Lifeson has his crew of chicks that follow on the road.
So
it was depressing.
Because
I left Van Halen right during the first half of the first song.
Sure.
Because I'm like, I can't watch David Lee Roth not sing. And at least he was spry and like running around and dancing and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you go to see a show and the guy is contained to a chair the entire time.
But I knew it was going to be, like, pretty rough as far as how he was. I didn't realize it was going to be that rough. Now, he did stand up at one point, and it was the part with the famous drum roll and In the Air Tonight. And the place went crazy. Like, I mean, they went nuts for as much as, you know, 68-year-olds can. I mean, it was... Other than that, he just sat down and just swiveled around, and the shirts that said "Not Dead Yet" on it on the way out weren't quite as funny as they were on the way in.
Yeah,
you're like, he's not joking. Like,
because when he was on the Tonight Show or whatever the hell he was on, he stood up. So I assumed he would stand up.
No, that was the only. That was the only time he stood up the entire night. Was that song?
Because his back has been messed up forever.
Yeah.
But I mean, you really need to watch it to fully understand. We can describe it to you, but seeing it is just so bad. It's so bad to watch, especially the encore thing where you knew he'd have to walk all the way back out on stage,
the stairs. And by the way, there was like this one area by the soundboard that was open and didn't have any seats, but for some reason it was reserved for this one girl who was tripping balls and dancing the entire time. Like, she was like on acid. It was almost like, you know how like Talladega has a prison?
I actually shot video of that. I was like, oh my God. And she was there the entire show.
Well, that sounds like a terrible place to do acid.
Phil Collins. She's
looking at Phil Collins, just struggling.
Just seeing
turning him into, he turns into like a skeleton in front of your eyes.
Right.
Now, did they do something? Like, would a guitar player come next to him and, like, sing in the mic?
Oh, yeah. At one point during Easy Lover, there was this sassy singer who got up and did Philip Bailey's part. It was, like, this female singer. And she would, like, put his hand on his shoulder and, like, rub his chest. And he'd make this face like, whoa, my goodness.
Like, what am I going to do with this?
It's happening around me. Like, I can't move.
Who thinks I can get it up? It's frustrating every night to have this girl rubbing on me. Because in my pants, I'm as dead as the Dead Sea.
It was tough to watch, but I have to be honest. Like, the last four in a row, I was like, all right. But, man, I'd play a game where I'd just lock in on one person in the crowd and watch them dance. It was, like, the most awkward clapping. Like, they'd have only energy to clap for, like, maybe 10 seconds. They just give up and just...
So was it a seated crowd or was it mostly standing? Seated.
They were seated.
Seated where I was.
I'm all right with that.
Seated. Yeah. Which, hey, listen, no problem with that either. But I mean,
I don't know how it was on the floor. I actually forgot to look. But yeah,
I think they were standing up for the most part, like there. But everyone else was just like,
I don't mind sitting down. Especially, how long did he play?
Like two hours. Yeah, he played a lot.
Sit down. Who can stand up for 2 hours? Who are we kidding? Well, look at
I'm really sad I missed it. It sounds like it was really something.
It actually was. It was I've never seen a show like it, right. So it was fascinating. I will give it that. Well, it was utterly fascinating.
Yeah.
It was great, too, because the people selling bootleg shirts out front were like, we got T-shirts to this guy. Like, they didn't even know who he was.
Any size.
Any size. This guy.
Yep. Yeah, well, it sounds like it was a blast. And congratulations on you two for spending money on that.
So we just said Phil Collins just got wall-dicked.
That's right. Car number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. We'll score tickets to see the Bees take on the Oilers tomorrow night at the Garden. Select tickets still available. Visit Ticketmaster.com/Bruins to purchase today.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
So close, so near, and yet so far. But the throw hit Pierce's glove. He's out. Ball game over. Boston wins. And Boston wins the American League Division Series 3-1. And the Yankees, frankly, gave a gallant fight. And Kimbrough was just able to pitch through.
Inspiring confidence for everyone. Not to rain on the parade. In the last series, a lot of people thought the Red Sox were going to lose. They've taken four. Obviously, you got to give them credit for that. But the scary moments with Craig Kimbrough last night. Someone who is not going to be re-signed if they have any brains in their heads.
That was terrifying. And up until that point, okay, so if you know how Chris Sale was using the eighth. John, if Kimbrough was to have blown that,
yeah,
would you have been pissed at Cora this morning? Because I don't think I would have.
No.
I would have been like, well, I mean, that's something that
seems
like the right thing to do.
The idea is with the bullpen you have to get Craig Kimbrough a lead. You have to present a lead to Craig Kimbrough going to the ninth inning. That's the best managing you can do. And that's exactly what Cora did. He got his, not just a one-run lead, he somehow got his closer a three-run lead.
Which he needed every bit of, of luck.
Cora did his job.
Yes, he did do his job. He managed extremely well under difficult circumstances throughout the series.
So does Price pitch game two? Yes. Does he start game two?
Yes, we were just discussing that. Yeah, and I think
you have to.
Yeah.
There's no other option. You can't pitch him on the road, and you just got to hope Sale can go for a while and that you can save your bullpen a little bit. Because if Price flames out, and in a 7-game series, it's even scarier.
Yeah, because he's game three. He's lined up to pitch game seven.
He's gonna. Well, I mean, if either way, he's gonna have to pitch a road game, Fred. Either way, he goes game two and game six. Game six is in Houston, or he pitches game three and game seven.
No, I thought it went 2-3-2, doesn't it?
No, but
yeah. So if he pitches game two, wouldn't that mean that his next game would be at Fenway, right?
If he pitches game two is at Fenway.
Yeah. Two is Fenway and six would be at Fenway too.
Yes.
So
it doesn't go 2-3-2?
Yeah, I believe.
That's
two,
my
three,
mistake. I thought it was 2-2-1-1.
Yeah, dummy.
Yeah. What's wrong with you? Yes. Sure. So yes, he would pitch at home. You could avoid him pitching on the road. And he won't have to face the likes of Verlander.
But I mean, think about that, what he did yesterday. I mean, first of all, you've got after Porcello, as I said, you know, didn't strike out a lot of guys, but he did enough to get through the fifth, and on top, it was only giving up one run, and then you had Matt Barnes, Ryan Brazier, and then when you brought in Chris Sale, I know that everyone's freaking out a little bit, but he only pitched 13 pitches. So even if they were to go to a game five, because of the way that inning ended, I still wouldn't have had a major problem with him doing that.
Well, he wouldn't have been able to go very long.
Would have gone a couple of
three innings.
And then you would have had to patch it together. All hands on deck with the ALCS starting the next day. Again, because tomorrow would be a rainout, they'd do it on Friday.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, the Astros, they have the advantage with starting pitching their bullpen, and the lineups are basically the same. So we'll see how that all turns out. See if managing makes its way. Because I'll tell you this, is there a better postseason pitcher than Justin Verlander right now? And to that, I'd say, John,
Nathan Eovaldi.
That's right. All right, when we come back, which is, there's going to be no commercials, so take the knob and rip it off. You heard John Sterling, who seemed kind of delighted to get out of there.
You see, I just think that was, he was finding a happy place, to be honest. I think that, not as much as Susan Waldman.
I think that Sterling just wants to leave.
Yeah, he's got a good steak dinner waiting for him.
Yeah, Waldman is the one who's completely... Well, no, in Midtown, he's off to the
Well, he's off to Jersey for the apartment, but I mean, yeah.
See, I think once he leaves,
he's kind of in a hungry man at his table, at his one room apartment, in one bedroom apartment in Jersey.
Right. He's sticking his fork in the frozen mashed potatoes.
Yes, he's got. Damn it, they never cook right.
Right. See, I think it's one of those things where he leaves the booth, and as soon as he steps out those doors, like life has no meaning. I think that
he
keeps him alive.
He like disappears into thin air.
Right. He's like,
his life doesn't exist outside.
The dude from
of
Kung Fu, he just roams the earth, except it's like random Kmarts and Targets. He's just like walking through Big Lots aimlessly. Well, I just see him.
At least
like
he can keep it together, but Susan Waldman has a problem with that. We'll explore that. No commercials here, just the headlines.